Today, in some way, I am going to deviate from my trodden path for a homily. So it's not a reflection on the readings for the day with three practical implications. There still are three points, but I want to talk about divine mercy. The celebration of the second Sunday of Easter as Divine Mercy Sunday is a very recent phenomenon. It was on this Sunday in 2000 that Pope John Paul II canonized Sister Faustina Kowalska, and it is to her really that we owe the origin of the celebration. On the day that John Paul canonized Sister Faustina, he announced that from now on, throughout the church, this Sunday will be called Divine Mercy Sunday. Now, Sister Faustina was born in Poland, and she became a nun in the Congregation of the Sisters of Mercy. So probably some reason why this devotion came to be known as Divine Mercy. Her life was characterized by a very deep interiority. She was a deep contemplative and a mystic. On February 22, 1931, Sister Faustina experienced a life-changing vision of Christ. And this vision finally became the image of divine mercy that we most popularly see. It's Christ standing with one hand on his heart and the other stretched out in a white robe, and then two rays of lights are emerging from his heart. Story tells us that she could not sketch this image herself. So later an artist is the one who sketched it out for her. This image is now the signature image of the Divine Mercy devotion. Faustina died at a very young age. She was only 33 when she died. And in his lifetime, John Paul actively promoted the message of Sister Faustina. Now, this is just my thinking. I'm not sure this is true. John Paul is dead and gone, so I don't know if this is true or not. But probably his devotion to divine mercy and to the vision that Sister Faustina saw is probably the reason behind an encyclical he wrote in 1980. And this encyclical was called Rich in Mercy. So my homily today is really an expose of John Paul's understanding of divine mercy. Although nowhere in the encyclical does he say that he's writing it because of his devotion to divine mercy. Now, it is also my suspicion that Pope Francis has declared the coming year as a jubilee of mercy. And many of the things that Pope Francis is saying can go back directly to John Paul's encyclical of 1980. Now again, Pope Francis hasn't said that, but things that he's saying are so similar that I can't imagine that that is not the case. And if that is not the case, I admit I'm wrong. Nevertheless, this expose of this encyclical called Rich in Mercy, I think would be very fabulous for us to understand the whole idea of divine mercy. So, 3 points from Divine Mercy, Rich in Mercy, the encyclical. First of all, John Paul II talks about what God has revealed to us, okay? But I want you to pay attention to his very first sentence in this encyclical. He says, "It is God who is rich in mercy." By the way, when this encyclical came out, I was 14 years old. I had completely missed this encyclical. So in preparation for this homily, when I read this and I said the very first sentence of this encyclical is, it is God who is rich in mercy, whom Jesus has revealed to us as Father. One of the central tenets of Catholicism and Christianity is that Jesus is the Son of God. But then we also believe that he's not only the Son of God, but Jesus also revealed God. Jesus shows us what God is like. And JP 2 is saying in his very first sentence in this encyclical, it is the God who is rich in mercy, whom Jesus has revealed to us as Father. And since divine mercy is celebrated on the second Sunday of Easter, John Paul connects the entire events of Holy Week to God's mercy. He says, God who is rich in mercy, out of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead through our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. Now, John Paul does not treat mercy as merely a concept. It's not something, it's not an idea somewhere up there. He makes it, as I would call it, a very incarnational concept. In other words, something that has become real for us. John Paul says the message of mercy preserves a particular divine human dimension. In other words, the very fact that God became human, but Jesus became a man, it's already indicative of the mercy of God. And then we have Jesus' relationship with humanity. In his own suffering and in his relationship with the unfortunate and sinners, Jesus incarnates the God who is rich in mercy. This is a direct quote from JB2. Jesus incarnates the God who is rich in mercy. Jesus then is the face of mercy. You want to know what mercy looks like? You look at Jesus. Perhaps now we understand the rationale behind Jesus' ministry with tax collectors and sinners. Perhaps now we can understand why he shielded the adulterous woman, defended the poor widow when she put 2 pennies in the money box. Now we can perhaps understand why he allowed the sinful woman to wash his feet with her tears. We can understand why he forgave Peter even after he denied Jesus. Jesus is the face of the mercy of God. And what does this mean for us? I think it means for us that we can always, always, always count on the mercy of God. Not one person here, not me, not the Pope, is not a sinner. We are all equally in need of God's mercy, and Jesus is the face of the mercy of God. First point. Secondly, John Paul then goes on to solve the complex conundrum between God's mercy and God's justice. For many people, one of the greatest blocks to understanding God's unconditional love and mercy is the question of God's justice. Is God not just if God is merciful? If God is indeed all mercy, then is there no retribution for sin? Is there no need of conversion? Does not justice require punishment for sin? John Paul answers this question brilliantly. He derives his answer, surprisingly, from the Old Testament, where we think that God is a very stern God. Most people think of the God of the Old Testament as being very strict and a punishing God. But John Paul, hear what he says. Even the Old Testament teaches that although justice is an authentic virtue in man, and signifies the transcendent perfection of God, and hear this, I never thought a Pope would ever say this. John Paul says, even though the Old Testament teaches that although justice is an authentic virtue in man and signifies the transcendent perfection of God, nevertheless, love is greater than justice. Greater in the sense that it is primary and fundamental. Once again, hear what Pope says. Love conditions justice, and justice serves love. I think it's brilliant. The primacy and superiority of love, John Paul says, is a mark of the whole revelation. In other words, if there is anything that you know about God, the one thing that is primary is that mercy is superior, sorry, that love is superior than justice. And he says, the primacy and superiority of love is a mark of the whole revelation and is revealed precisely through mercy. And John Paul goes on to strengthen his insight by giving the illustration of the prodigal son in the New Testament. He says, even though the prodigal son squanders his dignity as the son, the father's mercy restores him to his original dignity as the son, not just as a slave. It is this kind of mercy, John Paul says, that is revealed in the cross and in the resurrection. The cross and the resurrection, John Paul says, shows, and hear this, that love is more powerful than death and more powerful than sin. And I love that statement. I have often felt so unworthy before God, and here is John Paul saying to me that the cross and the resurrection of Jesus shows that love is more powerful than death, more powerful than sin. Folks, in today's world, this insight of John Paul is very useful. Because we live in a time when we minimize our sin and exaggerate other people's sin. There's always somebody else's sin that is a problem for people. Our own sin, well, God understands. This leads to tremendous amount of self-righteousness and an equal amount of justice, of judgment of other people. We must remember what John Paul II says. Love is more powerful than death, more powerful than sin. And thirdly, God's mercy is the mission of the church. Now here is where I think that Pope Francis is declaring the coming year as the year of mercy, because he's calling the church to be a church of mercy. And I think it directly goes back to John Paul. John Paul calls the mission of mercy the greatest task of the church. Hear this, Church of God. The mission of mercy is the greatest mission of the church. So today's gospel reading is directly connected. Jesus says to his disciples, whose sins you forgive are forgiven, whose sins you retain are retained, and he gives them the Holy Spirit. The mission of mercy is the greatest task of the church. He says the church lives an authentic life when she proclaims and professes mercy. John Paul sees the Eucharist and the Sacrament of Reconciliation as a place where people can experience mercy in a unique way, that is, the love which is more powerful than sin. Therefore, the church professes and proclaims conversion. Conversion, in John Paul's mind, is understood as discovering the mercy, the love, the patience, and the kindness of God, who is Creator and Father. You know how many times we go for confession and we're very scared, right? My gosh, my sins, I'm so humiliated by it. Or I have to, how do I talk about this to somebody? But John Paul says that's not the focus of mercy. That's not the focus. The focus is to discover the mercy, the kindness, the patience, the love of God, who is Creator and Father. And he continues, the church must consider it one of her principal duties to proclaim and to introduce into life the mystery of mercy revealed in Jesus Christ. In John Paul's vision, the church must both practice mercy and appeal for mercy. Now compare this to the to Oklahoma's decision to carry out the death penalty with firing squads, and I hear latest through the gas chamber. What does God's mercy mean for our politics, our economics, our law enforcement, our legal system? If we were indeed touched by God's mercy, will that change race relations, immigration policy, healthcare system, and the way we treat those we disagree with? I'm saying that that this Divine Mercy Sunday is more than about devotion. Devotion is a good way to express what we experience in our lives, which is the mercy of God, to appeal for it, but then also to actually let the mercy of God touch not only us, but the entire world. The mercy of God is about a practice, it's about a discipline, it's about a lifestyle. And today, I think John Paul, if he was alive, he probably would be inviting us to experience the love of God, which is more powerful than death, more powerful than sin. So today, the second Sunday of Easter, and this Divine Mercy Sunday, may this Eucharist be the place where we experience divine mercy. Christ continues to break his bread, break his body. Christ continues to shed his blood because Christ is the face of God's mercy. Let us open our hearts to that mercy of God. People of God said,